Okay, hi, I'm Robert McKinley. The title of this presentation is Sediment Fingerprinting to Determine the Source of Suspended Sediment in a Southern Piedmont Stream. This research was performed by Rajith Mukundan for his PhD. His major professor is David Radcliffe, and he was assisted by Jerry Ritchie, Mark Reese, and myself. Before I go on, we'd like to express our sadness. Jerry Ritchie was influential in this research, and he passed away this summer. So this morning, I'd like to give you a little background on our research, show you our study site, explain the methods we used, and give you the conclusions we drew. The southern Piedmont from 1860 to 1920 was under intense cotton agriculture. And as a result of few, if any, conservation measures, experienced excessive erosion rates. In fact, it's been estimated that 10 cubic kilometers eroded in the region and were deposited in stream beds and floodplains. We refer to these sediments as legacy sediments, and our streams are still downcutting through them today. And if you can see it in this picture, we took one of our tributaries. This is a log that was buried underneath over 2 meters of sediment during the cotton farming era, and it's just now been exposed. So Section 303D of the Clean Water Act established the TMDL system with one of the pollutants of concern being suspended sediment. However, in order to implement a TMDL, you must first identify sources of erosion. Therefore, that establishes a need for a technique to identify those sources in suspended sediment. Our study site is the North Fork Broad River watershed. In northeast Georgia, it's a typical southern Piedmont watershed, 182 square kilometer drainage area, 72% forest, 15% pasture land use pattern. The objective here was to determine the source of suspended sediment using sediment fingerprinting. And we hypothesized that the legacy sediments, which make up the banks, are the primary source of sediment in the stream. So sediment fingerprinting utilizes chemical and or microbial tracers to create a signature or a tracer for both potential source soils and suspended sediment. These tracers must be measurable, they must be representative, and they must be conservative in that they don't change from the point, chemically change from the point of erosion to the point where we capture them. And by comparing the fingerprints of both the sources and the suspended sediment, we can establish a relative source contribution. To begin with, we took potential sediment source samples. There were 250 samples taken spatially distributed throughout the watershed. We sampled from a depth to a depth of 2 centimeters. And we divided our sources up into 4 categories: forests, pastures, stream banks, and an upland subsurface category, which consisted of construction sites, unpaved roads, ditches, and field gullies. Traditionally, suspended sediment sampling would consist of transporting large volumes of water for manual filtration. However, a unique aspect of this study was that we modified a continuous flow centrifuge to run on a gasoline motor and attach the pump to it, mounted on the back of a pickup truck, and we actually sample on-site during an event. As you can see, we need around 100 to 200 grams of sample for analysis, which would traditionally require the transport of 1,000 liters of water, roughly, depending on concentration. However, using the centrifuge, we were able to collect the same mass in approximately 2 hours on-site. This is a picture of the centrifuge in operation, as well as the bowl with the suspended sediment collected on its sides. We had a total of 20 samples from 6 different storms. We sampled over a period of about 7 months. We tried to collect samples from both the rising and the falling limb of the hydrograph. And we sampled from various discharges and various corresponding turbidities. tracer selection was a stepwise process. We began with an initial pool of 21 tracers. The first step in the selection was discriminant analysis. And from the initial pool of 21, we had 11 that were able to discriminate between sources. The second step in selection is the removal of non-conservative sources. And we found aluminum, lead, iron, and magnesium to be non-conservative, so they were removed from our tracer pool. And the next step was the removal of redundant tracers, which left us with cesium-137, N15, chromium, and uranium as our tracer suite. However, we found after several events that chromium and uranium were actually non-conservative as well, so we ended up with this pair, cesium-137 and N15, as our tracers. Cesium-137 as a tracer is based on its surficial deposition as a result of nuclear weapons testing. Because of the fact that it's surficially deposited, it makes an excellent tracer at distinguishing surface soils versus subsurface soils, with the subsurface soils, of course, protected from deposition. N15 is based on the isotopic fractionation of nitrogen, and this is dependent on plants and microbes preferring the lighter isotope. And once they utilize it, they leave the soil enriched in the heavier isotope, providing us with a signature. Okay, this biplot is illustrating the removal of chromium as a tracer due to being non-conservative. The vertices of the triangle represent median values for our potential sources, with the space created by them being conservative space. As you can see, these triangles are source samples. They fall outside of the large triangle created by the sources. Therefore, chromium was considered non-conservative and removed. The same thing for uranium. We had sources fall outside of our boundaries. Therefore, uranium was removed as a tracer. And finally, N15 plotted against cesium. All of our samples fell within the space, and this was considered our tracer suite. Cesium-137 is concentrated in the upper 20 to 30 centimeters of soil, once again, due to its surficial deposition. We found the highest concentrations in forests, we believe due to inherently low erosion rates in forests preventing cesium from being removed. We found low concentrations in banks and subsurface sources, again, because they were protected from deposition. However, cesium is unable to distinguish between banks and subsurface sources due to the fact their signature is very similar. N15 was high in pastures due to fractionation from plant uptake. We found high levels in banks, and this is due to the microbes preferring the lighter isotope and denitrification. We found low levels in forests, and this is due to nutrient recycling. And we found low concentrations in construction of road sites due to low microbial activity from low organic matter content. There were two methods used to determine relative source contribution. The first was a multivariate mixing model. The second was N-member mixing analysis. We used the two so that we might compare. This biplot is from the N-member mixing analysis. It's showing, once again, the vertices are the potential sources. However, now we've divided them all by a maximum value, giving us a scale of 0 to 1. And the same thing for our sediment samples. And as you can see, the grouping is close to this vertex here, which is the bank. Okay, these two figures are showing the two different mixing models and allow you to compare individual samples. Vertical axis is source contribution, and the horizontal is sample number. So between the two models, there is some variability for each sample. However, overall, we found them very similar, with 60% of suspended sediment originating from stream banks, somewhere around 30% from our upland subsurface category, and then around 10% from pastures. So to conclude, N15 and cesium-137 made an excellent set of tracers for fingerprinting sediment from multiple sources. Mobile centrifugation is an excellent alternative to manual filtration for suspended sediment sampling. The data we collected supported our hypothesis that the legacy sediments making up the banks were the main source of suspended sediment in the stream. And finally, currently we're doing research using fatty acid methyl esters as a new tracer so as to distinguish between dirt roads and construction soils. Any questions? To my agriculture, row crops, we didn't find any evidence of row crops or agriculture contributing any sediment to the stream. We originally looked at them.
Well, to be qualified as a fingerprint, you have to prove that the uniqueness of the sources, and I didn't see any proof of either cesium-137 or nitrogen-15 that identify with any of the sources and the uniqueness of that.
They did come out unique. I just didn't include the slides due to time constraints. But we mainly use principal component analysis to determine it. If you like, the paper's about to be published, and you see all the evidence you like in it.
Well, I think that is the main point. You need to present this first, you know, to convince anybody that this is a conservative or whatever the fingerprinting traces. So I think when you do the presentation, you need to present the most important element first before you get into it.
That's a good point. That's a good point. Thank you.
Why do you think some of those tracers that you had selected ended up being non-conservative? What would be the reason for that?
So probably sorption or something, you know, we weren't really sure. Basically, we were looking at, you know, a median value, and we wanted it to stay above it or inside the triangle. And well, I guess we're not really sure.
So if anything happened to them in the stream, that they weren't in sediment, they were lost in the process.
So they happen to be associated with maybe some larger fraction of the soil that deposited out in the transport process or deposited out in the stream so it wasn't carried in the suspended sediment you sampled? Is that?
Yeah.
I haven't thought a lot about that.
Yeah.